Are you a boy or a girl? Oh, that question. The eternal question of my life. The question that seems to follow me everywhere I go. I can think back to a time when I was out skating with my childhood best friend, Evan, in Covina Park, California. He was 2 years older than me and had dirty blonde, shaggy hair and blue eyes. People always thought we were siblings, and, in a way, it felt like we were. While we'd skate, there was always a group of boys skating in the park with us. One time, they confronted me with that question. Evan stood up for me. He told them I was a girl. "So, you're a tomboy?" they asked, their faces scrunched up with uncertainty. I shrugged it off and nodded yes, feeling exposed. Those moments came often, and the truth was that I wanted to say I was a boy. If I had to opt for being either a girl or a boy, the answer was obvious. It was so simple. I wish I could still say that now. I wish it was really that simple. As I've gotten older, the question carries more and more weight, because to me, the question isn't whether I am a boy or a girl, but rather, why are there only two options to choose from to begin with? As a transmasculine person, I notice the look of confusion on people's faces when I speak. My voice sounds feminine to them. So when possible, I opt for not speaking at all. I wear hats and hoods to avoid eye contact with strangers, and I bind my chest to appear flat. Baggy sweatshirts are my best friends. I feel alien in most public spaces, unless, of course, it's a queer space. I am hypervigilant in every place I enter because I experience transphobic microaggressions on a daily basis. The blatant dirty looks, the doubt on people's faces, and then, of course, come the questions and comments. Are you in the correct bathroom? Why do you look like a boy? The men's bathroom is over there. Your food is ready, sir. Oops. I mean, ma'am. It gets tiring after a while. Nobody should have to repeatedly explain their existence. I've found myself explaining my existence my whole life, even as a professional skateboarder. What do you do for work? I'm a professional skater. Their head tilts to the side. It's the same look I get when people realize that I am not a cisgender guy. Skateboarding thrives on the perception of being progressive. One would think that an industry created by outcasts, creatives, and counterculture simply wouldn't tolerate sexism, homophobia, transphobia, and misogyny. But the reality is far different. For years, I was pushed aside because the industry didn't know what to do with me. They didn't know how to accept a tomboy skater. I once received an award titled Skates Like a Dude. I was judged by my looks first, my skill level second. Skateboarding has a complicated past. On the one hand, you have heroes like Patty McGee, Alyssa Steamer, and Kara Beth Burnside, who have carved a path for women in skateboarding. Alyssa Steamer and Alexis Sablone are two of my all-time favorite heroes. And they were the first non-male skateboarders I had ever seen. They are pioneers. The future is slowly getting brighter, but it's clear to me that the skate industry needs to take a look at itself with a critical eye. Cisgender white men run the show in the skateboard world. And as long as this is true, folks that don't fall into that category are stuck waiting for a piece of the pie, while large brands take advantage of their stories and use their creativity for their own benefit. The saddest part of this arrangement is that most of the time, those companies don't even realize they're doing it. In a lot of cases, marginalized communities deal with tokenization and exploitation. And the skateboard industry is no exception. I have been skateboarding since I was around 2 or 3 years old. The moment I started, I knew that I wanted to skate for the rest of my life. It was my favorite thing then and remains sacred to me to this day.